presentation is, Advancing Community Health Worker Policy and Workforce Development, Public Health Department's Opportunities and Responsibilities. And we have Carl Rush, who's with the University of Texas School of Public Health at Houston, the Project on Community Health Worker Practice and Policy. Gail Hirsch, who is the Director of the Office of Community Health Workers at the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and a board member of the Massachusetts Association of Community Health Workers, and Deanna Abeta from the New Mexico Department of Public Health. She's been there for over 6 years, and she currently is with the Office of Community Health Workers, where she is the tribal and northern liaison and statewide coordinator.
Good morning, everybody. Muy buenos dias. Struggling a little bit here. It's very hard to find coffee with the lines this morning, so I'm going to power through this. But thank our colleagues from South Carolina for a great presentation, and I will be referring to them. I'm going to take a little bit of we always talk about a 30,000 or 10,000 view of all this. There are some of us who have been trying to track what's been happening with states around the country, and it is a challenge. Of course, our little disclosure, we got to say that. So I'm going to talk about a little bit about what's happening at the federal and state levels from a big picture standpoint. And first of all, very briefly, the feds are increasingly interested. There's been a lot. You've heard a fair amount about CDC's investment in all of this, but they have actually made it a priority as part of their chronic disease prevention emphasis to support the development of policies at the state level, to support efforts by the states to develop those policies, including actually providing direct TA to certain states. There is, many of you know, an interagency, high-level interagency work group within Health and Human Services focused on community health workers, and having to say that they are going to be coming up in early December, I think, with a webinar about what they've learned from dialogue with community health workers about what the feds should be doing in this field. They've been really terrific at reaching out to find out what folks out around the country would like to see happen. So that's very exciting, and we have the Office of Women's Health, the last several years, has been working on leadership training for community health workers around the country. And I see Susan Coons is in our audience here. She's deeply engaged in that. the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation discovered very early on that they have hundreds of grantees out there now. Well, not hundreds, but certainly dozens. A pretty good percentage of the Innovation Challenge Awards and most of the state innovation models have strong components regarding community health workers, but they're finding that a lot of those grantees don't really know what they're doing. And so they have pulled together a learning collaborative of that group. And then, of course, we probably mentioned this before, but I think it was at least a very important symbolic gesture when the National Healthcare Workforce Commission is formed under the ACA that as one of their 15 commissioners, they appointed a community health worker. So I think that's terrific. So summarizing briefly, there's a lot going on in the states. This is a somewhat subjective and not entirely systematic view of what's going on, but the darker areas are the ones where the states seem to have been moving most quickly, and we can probably move move South Carolina into the dark brown column this year. But the interesting point is, since our theme for the presentation is about the role of health departments, that it is driven by the state health department or the Medicaid office in most of these states, and even where they are not leading, they are very often active participants in coalition activities around policy development. So looking at these and see if there are some patterns, we've seen that certain states have chosen the legislative route to get things off the ground. This started now 15 years ago, I guess, with Texas legislation. In Ohio and Massachusetts, which you'll hear more about in a minute, has followed a long process of development of a sequence of legislative steps to establish the field. But then this year, the first half of this year, in very rapid fashion, New Mexico, whom you will hear from in a second as well, and Illinois and Maryland adopted legislation to move the process along. So there's been a fair amount of activity in this recently. In the case of the Medicaid rules, there is, and I should have really, I thought I had changed this, but a couple of states that have really led through the strategy of changing Medicaid rules, Minnesota, of course, many of you are aware of, going back to 2007, but Wisconsin is now actively pursuing a state plan amendment related to the preventive services rules, which we may be able to talk a little bit about, and that's really driving the policy process in Wisconsin. So, a couple of states, you just heard from South Carolina, the policy change process was driven by specific health reform initiative, and the same is true in Oregon, where their coordinated care organization legislation and Medicaid waiver have really been the impetus for policies to establish standards for community health workers and other, what they're calling, traditional health workers. There are a number of states that have very active coalitions in which the state health department is involved and often supporting, but not necessarily leading. And those would include Arizona, who have been at it for quite some time, and Florida and Michigan. So we've learned from the pattern of the work of all of these states that there are four key areas of policy that need to be addressed. If not simultaneously, at least attention must be paid. I think that was Death of a Salesman, was it? Yeah, attention must be paid. Attention must be paid to all four of these areas. Occupational definition. We started out calling this occupational regulation and realized that was probably not the most appropriate way to look at it. So there's a lot of action going on this. Sustainable financing models, everybody's interested in that, of course. Workforce development cannot be neglected, because if you're going to create the demand and create the financing mechanisms, somebody's got to have the capacity to do the education and capacity building necessary for this workforce. And then lastly, to not neglect what your documentation and research standards are going to be, so that you have usable data. And we've heard about some of the challenges from South Carolina in getting all the data that they need. So those are some of the points that we're observing from a national perspective. And I would like now turned over to Gail. And by the way, I pointed out that the states are at this mostly on their own. And I want to put in a plug for an idea we've been trying to get support for, some resources to help the states exchange in a formal way what they're learning and the resources that they've developed or found. And the system that we have now is basically called Gail Hirsch, which is everybody calls Gail. So we need to show a little bit of mercy, because it isn't really her job to help all these states, but she does it anyway out of the goodness of her heart. So yeah.
Thank you. Hi. So that's why I'm here, so that my phone might not ring for a few more days after I get back. How many people here are from state health departments? Oh, this is great. This is just wonderful, because often I find many of the calls I get are from people that are not in state health departments, who are calling me to say, how do I involve my state health department? What should be my? I mean, Joan has called me. So, I mean, we've talked so many times about this. You know, how do you get them to move on this? Really quickly, let's see. This is our dinky little map. I love you guys' map. We need to get more maps like you have, which really show a lot more than what this does. But it was the only graphic I had. So anyhow, just sort of talking in an overview way, the Department of Public Health in Massachusetts, ever since I've been there, has understood, which has been a long time, has basically understood that community health workers are a core public health workforce. That is, we really can't do public health and our mission without community health workers. And we have, in various ways over the last 20 years, at least that I'm aware of, done various internal and externally related activities in order to move the workforce forward, starting with just in the 90s, a cross-departmental task force on defining the workforce and establishing workforce contract policies, because all of our public health services are contracted out in Massachusetts, so we have a contract policy that basically says if you're using our money to hire folks that fit this definition, then they need to get X amount of training and X amount of supervision. It is not enforced. I'll be the first one to say that, but it's a nice idea. So that's one of the things that we've done. I think it's fair to say that assuring a public health, a competent public health workforce is one of the 10 essential public health services that all public health departments are supposed to be doing. Internally, there have been lots of challenges, as I'm sure everyone knows. I wrote priorities twice, I realize, and maybe that was like Freudian, because actually, clearly people have, in health departments, and everybody who works in state government knows this, you're always responding to a crisis, you know. It's nice to have these great ideas. We're rife with, like, vision, but the reality is that we're responding to, like, you know, in a political way or a funding way and that sort of thing. And also just, I think part of it is just sort of helping people in other areas in the health department to really understand what this is about and why it's so important. So that's a definitional challenge, and just sort of helping people, as we know, we're all doing all the time, helping people understand. State public health departments really have a responsibility and a role in supporting the workforce in any way that they can, in convening key players. That's the one thing I have discovered, is that if people get a letter from our commissioner, they come. So if you can get your commissioner to send a letter, people will be more likely to come. It's part of ensuring quality public health services, and we can also have a role in convening other state agencies. So even though public health is small compared to a lot of state agencies, we're still at the table and can hopefully influence other state agencies. In Massachusetts, we've been able to work with our Attorney General's office, with our Department of Labor, and all of this has brought resources to the efforts. Again, I said we've been doing this for over 20 years in the department. We've supported grassroots organizing of community health workers. We have 4 established training centers in Massachusetts, and we've, at varying levels, tried to engineer support for them and convening of them and hosting meetings where we can actually sort of maybe become friends a little bit and that sort of thing, and actually got some federal funding from the Maternal and Child Health Bureau to form the Massachusetts Association of Community Health Workers back in 2000. And we continue to try to find resources and provide technical assistance, and I'm a board member. For example, my department lets me spend my time doing technical assistance to support the Massachusetts Association of Community Health Workers. just a few key things. We were able to work with our external partners, the Mass Public Health Association, the Mass Association of Community Health Workers, to engineer the inclusion of a provision in our 2006 health reform law that mandated our state health department to convene a statewide advisory council and make recommendations to the legislature, which we did, and it established the state Office of Community Health Workers, and it also led to a recommendation to establish a board of certification we have a board of certification at the state health department in our division of health professions licensure. So I'll just mention a couple of things about that. Again, it's all about definition and core competencies and scope of practice. So these are the sort of official functions of my office. I will say very quickly, and other people have said so as well, I was doing this myself for a long, long time, and now CDC is really devoting significant resources through chronic disease funding to actually support state infrastructure due to the efforts of Nell Brownstein and some others there to actually really, I mean, the budget, I'm actually going back to work and posting a job position for my office. Yeah, I know, this is really, like, amazing. but anyhow, these are sort of some of the functions that a state office of community health workers can do. In our health reform law, which was a follow-up to our initial health reform, our payment reform, which was in 2012, we have then managed to create so much sort of momentum and identity for community health workers that they're part of some of these initiatives, which I don't really have time to go into, that are part of our health reform law. But some of them are at the Department of Labor, some of them are at the Department of Public Health, and I can answer more questions about that if we stick around. Again, CDC's support has been critical. It's critical for state health departments to play a leadership role in developing community health worker leadership and supporting state associations. Obviously, always walking this very fine line of working with the other disciplines to help them understand that it's really important. And this is something we are thinking about constantly and, 24/7 here. How do you maintain the integrity of the workforce while you move forward? The state certification process sits at the health department, and we are just bending over backwards to ensure, and it's really hard, that community health workers are shaping the process. But they're the ones that wanted it at the state health department because they felt it would give more credibility and heft to the process. So we're trying to set up infrastructures and at the same time build political will and awareness and educate all the parties involved, diverse parties, about the importance of doing it this way. So I think that's probably my time.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm not sure how much time I have, but
5 minutes.
About 5 minutes, so I don't know how much damage I could do in that time. But okay, we've really come a long way with the New Mexico Department of Health. It's been kind of painful. We started several years ago trying to get legislation, trying to get our office in state statute and a million other things in the political arena. And finally, this last legislative session, we were able to get a CHW bill passed by the legislature and signed by the governor. And so after many years of struggling and begging and crying, we finally got it. And I know there's been a lot of controversy about certification. Some people have not been supportive of it, but I believe that we've brought a lot of the community health workers to the table through our advisory council that represents pretty much a lot of different stakeholders throughout New Mexico who really have driven this process. We, even though we're the ones with the authority to provide the state certification, we really wanted it to be more of a community-driven process, a CHW process. So if you look at the slide here, these are part of the governor's healthcare workforce initiative. And of course, you know, we all know we want to increase access to care. And, you know, I know it says develop a CHW workforce. I really think it's developed. It's more of supporting that workforce, providing resources to that workforce, improving quality of care, of course, promoting job opportunities, and supporting some kind of a sustainable funding for CHW services. And that's our first step in Medicaid reimbursement through MCOs. So right now we're working with Health and Human Services to try to get them to understand really the importance of community health workers in the work that they do. And just that, you know, they're at the ground level, they know their communities, they know the language, they really are trusted members of the community, and they really do provide wonderful services throughout our state. You know, we have a state that's very rural and frontier, and I think that Medicaid is struggling a little bit to really understand the importance of the community health workers and the work that they do. So we've been having several meetings really to get that point across to them. So we're keeping our fingers crossed and really hoping that they will work with us. And right now, they want us to partner up with the managed care organizations to look for some sort of a billing, third-party reimbursement and billing codes. And so, of course, our certification in New Mexico is voluntary. So we have, you know, we're not mandating anything. It's up to the agency that hires them or the individual CHW to determine if that's something that they care to do. And I've got just a couple of minutes here, so really quickly, we're going to start by grandfathering our community health workers. We're going to have a renewal process every 2 years. And, of course, we have a standardized CHW training in multiple settings, and the majority of them will be offered in community settings. And we're looking at having a CHW registry, and we're required to have a background check for our CHWs. And you have to be at least 18 years or older to become a CHW. And then, of course, we want to integrate them into social and health systems of care. And why are they important for us here in New Mexico? Well, our state ranks at or near the bottom of national health statistics. Our population is one of the most diverse in the nation. There's a critical shortage of primary oral and mental health care providers, particularly in our rural and frontier areas. More than one-third of our population lives in the frontier areas, and our poverty level is above the national average. And of course, our health disparities are among racial and ethnic groups. And so where are we now? We have our Certification Act. We're going to be having a hearing regarding our rules and regulations document in early December. We're looking at putting our certification board in place right now, and we're working with our IT people to have an online application. And let's see, and then as far as our partnerships, we have an advisory council, like I said, that's representative of the state. We've got universities, community colleges, the AHECs. We've got primary care providers. And, of course, most importantly, we have the community health workers at the table. And some of our other partners are the Health and Human Services Division. You know, as you can see, it kind of goes on and on there. And finally, we're really needing to have some kind of an evaluation process in place. You know, we want to know how it's going to impact the job market. We want to know how it's going to really help to develop the career and also the integration process and contributions for that access to care. So I think that's it.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.